Live life at your pace. Click the banner or go to visitwilliamsburg.com to discover how. Because here in Williamsburg, life moves at one pace, yours. Visit a live archaeological dig site on the very grounds where America began. Or walk the fields where our country was won. Live like a colonial by day or track 18th century ghosts by night. For all the history to be found here, there's plenty more to make for yourself. It's all waiting for you in Williamsburg. Book your trip today and live life at your pace.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And now, prepare yourself for the only talk radio show you'll want to turn up.
Crank this thing.
Sirius XM Pandora presents the place where your hard rock and metal voice can still be heard.
You bet your ass, baby.
Unfiltered, uncensored, say whatever you want.
Hit the record button. Anything can happen, you know?
I know that ain't nobody out there came to be mellow tonight, now did you? I say there ain't nobody. I'll say there ain't nobody not out there that even wants to be a little bit mellow. Now is there? Anybody wants to get mellow, you can turn around and get the fuck out of here, all right?
This is the Trunk Nation Podcast. With host A. Trunk.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Eddie Trunk Podcast. Hope you are having a great week. And thank you for joining me for another interview, talking rock with you and talking to some of the biggest names in the world of rock and some of the greatest stories in the world of rock as well. I tell you every week, just a reminder, everything you hear, every interview you hear on this podcast originated live on my SiriusXM radio show. If you're in the U.S. and Canada and you're only listening to this podcast, you're only getting the tiniest of tastes of what I do on a daily basis on the radio. So join me on SiriusXM, Faction Talk, Channel 103, daily, Monday through Friday, live, 3 to 5 Eastern, noon to 2 Pacific for Trunk Nation, interactive rock talk with you, and that's where all these interviews come from. And hey, if that time window doesn't work for you to listen live, if you're on board with us at SiriusXM, you can listen to the show anytime you want. It's all archived on the app. Full shows, full interviews, audio, video, and more. If you're only listening to the podcast, again, only getting a tiny taste of what I do on the radio each and every day. Thank you for joining me. Be sure to follow me on social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook page for info and updates. Our interview this week is with Aerosmith drummer John Douglas. John has a real interesting story. He jumped into Aerosmith at a difficult time when they were having issues with Joey Kramer, and he's had the gig ever since. He's still kind of in a fill-in role, although he did play the band's recent residency in Vegas. And presumably, if the band does continue going forward and there's talks of touring, he may very well end up staying in the band as the drummer. John has an interesting story, though. He was a drummer in an 80s band that didn't go anywhere back in the day. He's also an accomplished artist. And this interview you're about to hear was done right after John did an art exhibit in Vegas of all of his amazing artwork. So Aerosmith were supposed to play in Vegas, but as we know, they blew out the last four shows of their residency. But John still did his art exhibit, and I went to it. It was great. So it was a tough time at the time we did this interview because we still really don't know what's going on with Aerosmith going forward. And obviously it was a weird time with John because Aerosmith was in this limbo and he had his art thing coming up, but still his story is really interesting. And I think it's really interesting on an unknown musician could end up becoming an accomplished drum tech and then later end up playing drums in some of these iconic bands. You'll get that entire story right now with John Douglas, drummer in Aerosmith. Enjoy on the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Live life at your pace. Click the banner or go to visitwilliamsburg.com to discover how. Because here in Williamsburg, life moves at one pace, yours. Here, our waters are splashing and rejuvenating. Our history is for seeing and experiencing. Our theme parks are for riding and sometimes flying. And our great outdoors are yours for exploring and restoring. It's all waiting for you in Williamsburg. Book your trip today and live life at your pace.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
I love my cat, Tiger. And as my best friend, we speak our own language. With that, you love your litter. He does, because I use Fresh Step Outstretch litter. It absorbs 50% more waste and odor and requires less changing compared to Fresh Step Multicat. Less changing means more time playing. Right, Tiger? That's a yes. Find Fresh Step Outstretch cat litter in the pet aisle. Fresh Step is a registered trademark of the Clorox Pet Products Company. Certain trademarks used under license from the Procter & Gamble Company or its affiliates.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
I need the charcoal mask. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink?
This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera.
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.
I'm really excited to have this guy in with me today, sitting here with us. I didn't know if he'd still be in town, but he is. He had an amazing display of his artwork here in Vegas over the weekend, which is just got a lot of blank walls in this place, so I might have to talk to him about making a deal and see what I can do to spruce things up. I can only work Amazon so many times, but joining me now is current Aerosmith drummer and artist John Douglas. Good to see you, man.
Thanks, Eddie. It's
Thank you for being you. Here. Yeah. You had a great night there Saturday, it looked like. Everybody really enjoyed themselves.
It was a great turnout. I was super flattered and honored that everybody showed up, had some rock and roll royalty there unexpectedly. Yeah, it was hard work for me, man.
Well, imagine, so tying in with that a little bit, obviously this whole residency, and you're currently playing with Aerosmith, didn't wrap up the way you had all hoped it would.
No, understatement.
Yeah, in typical Aerosmith fashion, I think, because something could always go wrong, right? But obviously the last four shows being lost because of Steven. What can you tell us about all that first? Because that did impact your art thing, because Steven was supposed to be there.
Next question. I mean, I honestly don't know much, you know. I mean, it like you said, it was not anything that anybody in the band wanted to do. I mean, it's ultimately health comes first.
Right.
And, you know, unfortunately with singers, as you know, it's like everything goes for the throat, you know. The rest of us, we can muddle through, you know, if you're, but I don't know what to tell you because I don't know much.
But he was the reason why I bring it up beyond that, and I understand, especially in your position there, there's only so much you can say, so I'm not going to push you on that. But the reason I bring it up is one of the main things was he was, because it was marketed as such, of him being
your relationship
with him, that he was going to be there on Saturday at your art gallery.
Yeah, so months ago, before we even got back together for this year, I was at home in Texas and he was, I think, in Maui still or something. And he called me, we were talking, and he asked me kind of what I've been doing. Well, we're just catching up, you know? And, I told him I was literally painting when he called, and, you know, I had this art show in Vegas that was originally lined up for the first leg that was supposed to be like, whatever that was, May or something.
When he lost shows because of rehab. Right.
Yeah. So, but I told him about the art show, and he goes, "Great, I'm coming. I wanna be there. I wanna help you sell some art, and of course, which is great for me,
sure,
because I get it. I don't have the marquee name, and,
right?
You know what I mean? And to get him there would
it's a great hook.
Yeah, great. Yeah. And it was his idea, which is even better,
right?
You know, so I said great, and then of course that first leg went away, and then I rescheduled and. And, you know, ultimately, it was all geared up for it. And, of course, Joe was going to come. Everybody was going to come.
Right.
Joe, Brad, Tom, everybody was going to come. And I knew it was – look, it's always risky advertising somebody's going to be there that I have no control over.
The line is always subject to change.
Yes.
Always put that in. Yeah. That gets you off the hook. You know why I bring that up? Because I do a lot of remote broadcasts. And for a couple of years, I was doing this show for once a month from the Rainbow with a live audience in L.A.
That's right. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I would always have all these huge names. And 98% of the time, those names showed up. But to get any time I do a bowling event for the DO Cancer Fund and we raise money and I put my celebrity team out and I always tell whoever's doing the marketing, put subject to change because it gets you off the hook. You know, I mean, not that you want that to happen,
correct,
but shit happens.
Yeah. And the gallery owners understood that because they've dealt with celebrity artists or, you know, celebrities before and they were perfectly aware, you know, but I felt like, you know, Stephen was very sincere in leading up when we were playing here. You know, I knew it was on his calendar, you know, and he would tell me every couple shows, you know, when, you know, it's on my calendar, I'm coming to your show. And the same with the rest of the guys in the band. And so none of us foresaw, you know, what happened ultimately. So obviously, you know, Brad showed up and it just so happened that ZZ Top was just playing
Right in the building.
Almost in the same room, you know, the same building. And I go way back with those guys, you know, so.
Well, we'll get to that. I want to get your whole story.
Yeah, so they came and Eric Singer from Kiss came and Fitzy and Todd from Slash's band came because I've known those guys. So I was super appreciative of the turnout.
Yeah.
So it was a good time.
Your artwork is amazing, man. It really
Thank
is.
You.
And I looking at those. So for people that want, as obviously this is radio, if you want the visual of John's art, what's the best website again? Where should they go to see the images?
Well, my website is super creatively titled johndouglas.com.
Well, that's what you want.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, it's amazing nobody else had that. It's probably fairly
common
name.
You know
how
many emails I get? Because the most famous John Douglas is FBI profiler that wrote Mindhunter and that Silence of the Lambs was based on this guy. He invented serial killer profiling for the FBI, and his name is John Douglas. I get email for him all the time.
Wants to buy it?
All the time.
He wants to buy it?
No, from people wanting me to investigate cases. I'm not kidding. I am not kidding.
Well, you know, I didn't know who that guy was, but when I looked for you on social media because I helped push out about your event, I was like, that's the one that kept coming up on whatever platform it was. I'm like, that doesn't look like JD from Aerosmith.
I know it. I don't. So anyway, I got in early on the whole website thing, but it's basically my portfolio, but it has all the drums and guitars that I've painted over the years. And then it's got the fine art that I do and all the other stuff. And then you can obviously go contact now. All that art is at an amazing gallery here in Vegas and it'll be there until at least till January.
Well, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah,
so the gallery was so Friday was a public thing. Saturday, what I went to was more of a private thing. You mentioned some of the rock guys there, but that stuff will stay up on the walls there.
Yeah.
So people coming to Vegas between now and, like you say, January.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, well then absolutely go check it out. I didn't know it was staying there.
Yeah.
So where it is, because I walked around a little bit before I found the gallery, because there's a few galleries in there and it's massive.
Yes.
But there's the Venetian and the Palazzo here in Vegas. And there's this thing that cuts through both big indoor upscale mall called the Canal Shops.
Grand Canal Shops.
So if you go there, you want to find, it's more on the
Palazzo side. Yep.
Right. I was on the whole other side.
Yeah, I was too.
and I'm talking to my friends I was trying to meet and we're talking. It was like, but you want to go on the Palazzo side and you want to find, it's called An Amazing
Gallery. There's like an AG logo there. And a lot of my stuff is in the window. But yes, it's at the Palazzo side. Yeah.
And when you say your stuff, if you're a rock fan, you can't miss your stuff because a lot of your paintings are of music figures, whether it be Aerosmith guys, Kiss guys, ZZ Top, Jimi Hendrix, Bon Jovi. I mean, I saw a bunch of stuff, newer people like Harry Styles. I mean, there's everything up there. So you got to see what John does with these paintings. It's so impressive. And again, if you're coming to Vegas, check it out. Otherwise, go to his site, johndouglas.com, and you can see what he's done. Now, let's go way, way back. When we were talking about you coming on to do this, and I was getting, you sent me a couple bullet points about your history. Some I knew, some I did not know.
Yeah.
As a musician, so you were from Texas.
Yep.
And your first band was Kick Tracy?
That was my first band by any stretch of the imagination. My first many bands in high school around Texas and stuff, and then I was a band called XOX in Houston, and that's when I first met the ZZ Top guys and started painting stuff for them. Kick Tracy was an LA band, and they got signed to RCA 89-ish, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they needed to change drummers, and so I got referred by Bobby Rock and I think Bloss. Both of those drummers are from Houston. We all knew each other. And so they threw my name in.
Bloss Elias is from Houston?
Yep.
He's lived here forever.
Yeah,
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. And Bobby Rock's from Houston. And I think we all three went to different high schools, but same time, we all knew each other. So anyway, so I joined Kick Tracy and moved to L.A. And they're L.A. guys, and I'm from Texas.
So you did how many records with them?
We did two records. First one I think came out in '91. It's funny because we're on the Rolling Stone top 50 hair metal bands, which I never. Yeah, we had hair, and we were from L.A.
I hate that term, but
yeah. I know, me too, and. I think we're kind of thought of as like an 80s band, even though the first record didn't come out till 91. But, you know, we looked and we were marketed like everything before us.
Right.
And they were an L.A. band. And so, but we had the unfortunate timing that our first record came out when Nevermind came out.
Right. You I was know, just going to say, if you got out in 87, 88, 89, you had a couple years before, as I call it, the gate came crashing down.
Yeah.
The gate that was Nevermind.
Yeah.
And Nirvana.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you hit like the day it came out,
yes.
Or was it?
I mean, I can remember doing our first, tours and even promo for the album, I think, around the country. And I remember, you know, meeting the fans and just the groundswell of it. You know, have you heard of this band Nirvana? And it was just that's the way it was.
Because it was a good band. Kick Tracy was a good band. And there were so many bands that fell into that category that made good music but just got squashed because of the timing of what happened with the scene change.
Yeah.
I've talked about it many times. I've talked about it in documentaries. I mean, I've been in this. Next year is my 40th year doing this. And so I've seen it and lived through it all. And I've never seen anything that harsh and abrupt and overnight as that change.
Yeah.
And the sad part about it is there were some really good records that were made in 91, 92. Even bands that had earlier histories that were making new music at that time.
Yep.
Warrant made a great record at that time, couldn't get arrested with it. But there was a lot of that. And then there were bands that never got off the ground because of that shit timing that you were talking about.
Yeah.
When you mentioned Bloss being involved, now that I'm thinking about it, did Dana Strong produce
the first record?
He did, right?
Yeah. So that obviously was the connection where Bloss threw my name in. And of course, Bobby Rock played with Dana and Mark in Vinnie Vincent.
Right.
So, you know, it was just kind of that whole 6 degrees of separation deal for me and the drumming community. So it's, you know, I get asked a lot, especially at art events, you know, which came first, drums or art. And
that's what I was going to ask you, actually.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I was going to ask you.
I'm a drummer. I would bang down my mom's pots and pans, you know, and long before I could even hold a crayon, you know. So, and I've always been a drummer, even never stopped, you know. It's just I had to, you know, I was getting older and, you know, again, the whole Kick Tracy thing. And, you know, I had a daughter and I wasn't making any money. We weren't surviving,
right.
You know, and I had to let go of that dream and to be what I felt was be a responsible dad,
right.
And a member of society and stuff. And it just so happens I went back to Texas. And at that point, I'd been painting drums for many people, but specifically Frank and the guys from ZZ Top painting drums and guitars. And
so let me backtrack you there. Yeah, no, it's fine. But this is interesting. So you're in bands before Kick Tracy gets a deal, RCA, all this buzz, all this the time that comes out, doesn't happen because of the scene change, and then that's when you decide to go. Did you take art classes? Did you take painting, or did you just pick it up self-taught?
High school. I took band and art. In public school, that's how I learned to play drums, marching band, and playing to records, and art was just, I took it in high school. I just, but those were my two, and still are, those are my two passions. And I never stopped doing either one. And, you know, when you're in a band, regardless of their level, there's always art direction. You need a logo, you need a backdrop, maybe you're doing show posters or flyers, or, you know, maybe you're working on album covers. I've always done that in every band I'm in, as well as just side stuff. And then I started painting my drums early on because I wanted my stuff to look cool, and I had the capability, and it just spread.
The first thing you painted on was drums? Did you start painting traditionally canvas?
I didn't canvas. The stuff you saw there, that's recent. That's like in the last 12 years.
So your whole trip initially was putting artwork on drums?
Yeah.
And you did you do it for yourself initially on your own drums?
Yeah. I just wanted my stuff to look cool.
And what was the earliest stuff you were doing? Was it just colors, or were you actually drawing things, or?
I started doing my kick drum head real early on, band logos and stuff like that. That was a no-brainer. And then I didn't have the money. Like, I started on a 5-piece Orange Sparkle, no brand drum kit, you know. And as I got into other bands, you know, like Rush, when I was a freshman in high school, all the senior drummers were Rush fans, understandably. And I had never heard of them before, but I wanted to be like senior drummers, you know. So I took a deep dive into Rush, and then of course the first thing you got to do is get more drums, right? You know, so, and I couldn't afford to find the matching one, so I would get whatever I could get cheap at garage sales or whatever, you know, Red Sparkle or Black Drum. And the art part of me was just like, I can't have a Jelly Bean kit. So I took everything apart and I wrapped everything in chrome contact paper that I got at the grocery store. So I made everything match. And, you know, from 20 feet away on stage, it looked like a chrome drum kit. So that was my first foray into customizing drums. And I started adding weird stuff. My dad worked at Shell Oil as a research chemist, and he would bring me home like these broken gauges, and I started putting them on my drums, and I hooked up dryer vent hoses to my kick drums, and I told everybody they were air cooled, and just silly stuff inspired by my
idols. Did Alex Van Halen do that?
Yeah, but I did it before him.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did it in 1979, and he did it at 5150
right.
In 86. I pointed that out to him is when I. anyway, but I was inspired by everything that Alex Van Halen did, and both visually and as a drummer, and as well as, you know, the drum kits of Myron Grumbacher and, you know, all the cool kits.
There's a super underrated guy when you talk about the...
Yeah,
I was
as a drummer and...
Yeah, I was really glad when Pat Benatar recently went in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that they acknowledged him and they brought him out to play.
I haven't seen it yet, but yes, I did.
He plays as he comes... They introduce him and bring him out because I felt he should have been included with them, because as a kid, I saw Pat Benatar super early on, and, you know, I mean, her voice is amazing, of course, but I love Neil's playing, but I'll never forget it. When I went to see, this is like 81, and I went to see him, and he did something visually that I've never seen anybody do. He had his kick drum had some sort of like green gel or water in it, so that every time he hit the kick drum, it was transparent in the front. You'd see like an ocean wave kick up.
Wow.
He had some, I still don't know what
it
was.
You sure you weren't on something?
No, I was in high school. I would have been, my parents would have killed me. But there was like this green, like, I don't know if it was a gel or some sort of gel, or maybe it looked like a gel and it was a lighting
effect.
Maybe
it was a lighting thing, yeah.
But it looked like there was like a fluid, and every time the kick drum, you saw it jump.
All his kits were super creative, and he was a badass drummer, super energetic, and yeah,
he's a guy that doesn't get enough. I don't know if he still plays, but
agreed.
It was great to see him out there with them. So
well, he played with them.
Just the one song or whatever. Yeah. So you were in. It sounds, this is interesting, because you were certainly drawn to the instrument and to playing it,
yes,
because you were doing it and you were active, but you were also drawn to how to make drums look cooler, right?
Yeah.
And who were besides Myron, who were some of the other people that you saw that you were like, man, I could run with that, or I'd like to, that influenced you to do that?
Yeah, I mean, certainly Alex Van Halen. That was not so much custom painting, but super creative drum kits, how they were set up, you know, the long kick drums and, all of Van Halen was inspirational to me, you know, even obviously Edward and Dave, you know, I mean, just Van Halen as a, when they hit the stage was jaw dropping. And I saw them open for Black Sabbath, you know, and so
now that's a that's a notorious tour because everybody says that was when Sabbath was on fumes.
Yes.
And everyone was saying Van Halen annihilated.
Van Halen was on fire.
Yeah, yeah.
So literally, you know, literally and opening song, you know, yeah, so yeah, it was. It was
you saw that?
Oh,
huh?
I saw two shows
in Texas.
They did two shows in Houston back two nights, and I was at both of them.
Wow!
Yeah,
wow! You have memories of it?
Oh yeah, I got photos of it.
To see Van Halen that early on?
Yeah,
unreal.
Yeah,
wow.
I back then my thing was I would draw portraits again. That's always been my favorite thing. That was just drawing pencil back then because I didn't know how to paint. So I would draw my favorite bands and artists and stuff like that. So I drew a picture of Edward Van Halen, and I met them after their first Sabbath show, and I have a photo of Ed and I, 1978, holding this drawing that I did, that I still have, that he signed. So fast forward 20 years, I started working for Van Halen in 98, and I had the photo of that, like, on my Van Halen workbox, and Ed loved it, you know, that 20 years earlier, as a fanboy,
yeah,
you know, I had met him, and he signed this drawing that I did of him, you know, and I remember Al, once I got... was there for a while with Van Halen. Al asked me, did you have a picture of me and you together? Or did you know? I said, hey, you were probably a dick to me. And he laughed and said, yeah, I probably was.
So professionally, when you, beyond your own drums, when you started to do art on drums, who was the first kind of gig you had to do it for? Was it Frank Beard?
I'll tell you, it was, you know, because then after that, I started painting the actual shells of the drum, you know, so, and I was playing in a band in town that got really popular. We just couldn't get the deal, you know, but it popular enough that the guys from ZZ Top would come see my band play.
What were they
this
called?
XOX.
Okay.
Two girls, two guys, you know, mid 80s rock, you know. And, so eventually, you know, Frank, I met Frank at one of our shows and he said, man, your drums are cool. Who did that? You know, and I said, I did that. And he goes, would you ever want to paint drums for me? And I was never occurred. I'm like, well, yeah, okay. So I don't know how long between, you know, so that some drums were ordered and that takes a while because they come from Japan. But in the meantime, I was working at a music store in Houston, which is the last real job I had. And I had one of my snare drums up on the counter that I had painted, because I was working on it on company time, you know, and a guy came in that happened to be the drum tech for, I forget what band, but he saw the drum and he said, oh, that's cool. And he got my name and number. And 6 months later, he called me and he was a drum tech for Guns N' Roses for Steven Adler in 1987, 8 Appetite. Well, I mean, GNR was the biggest band on the planet.
Yeah.
So the first drums that I ever painted for anybody other than me was for Steven Adler.
And what'd you do on that kit?
I did two kits for him. I did one that looked like it was made out of granite or stone, you know, cracked rock. They looked like they were made out of stone.
Mm-hmm.
And the other kit was just for his house. I did, which was just a custom, like a purple pearl or a blue pearl. White, you know, just look like a Cadillac paint job. But those didn't seem much. I've seen a couple of pictures of that granite looking kid. He did, I think they played with the Stones with that. But what shortly after he was out of the band.
Right.
You know, so those were technically the first drums I painted for anybody, like the biggest band on the planet at the time. And I'm painting them in my garage in Cypress, Texas. Because I had the ZZ Top drums on order. So the second ones I did were for Frank of ZZ.
And what did Frank? What did you do initially on Frank's drums?
Frank's that. Let's see. What tour was that? It's a blur. The first one I did was, I want to think it was the Afterburner kit with the flames.
Now, when you do these, you know, I want you to give the audience some insights on some of the other drummers you've done, but when you do these. As you evolve into doing this and do more and more of it, does the direction on as to what goes on the drums come from the drummer, or do they say to you, hey, John, just run with it and come up with something for me? And how does it work? Do you throw ideas at them, or do they say, no, I want, you know, a bunch of, I don't know, say it was Peter Criss, I want a bunch of cats on there, come up with cool cats or something.
Yeah.
You know, how do you do it?
It varies. Early on, that was still the album tour cycle for bands, especially like ZZ. Their productions were very much geared towards the album and the art direction, and everything was, that's the way most of the, certainly arena rock level stuff was very, very focused for, you know, the album, and then they were going to tour that album, you know, ZZ Top, Recycler, and their tour, everything, the production-wise, was Recycler-oriented. So, like, that tour, I discussed with Frank, okay, what can we do, you know, and I know his first idea was, let's do, you know, every drum a different tin can. You know, like snare can would be a snare drum would be a tuna fish can, and one would be a Coke can, and one would be a can of beans, or, you know, a recycled thing. But then he changed his mind, and I forget what, I did two kits for that tour because it was such a long tour. I don't remember what one of them, the other one was, we called it Toxic Waste, where they look like yellow barrels, industrial like barrels with monsters breaking out of them, you know, with paint and stuff, and we called it the Toxic Waste kit. So early on, it was back and forth ideas with him, and then like the I think the right after Frank went on that tour, their opening act was Extreme, and so Paul Geary, the drummer for Extreme, and they were more than words was breaking.
Mm-hmm. And Paul also lives here now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, same thing. I guess he sees Frank's kid. Hey, who painted your drums pretty soon? I was painting.
Word of mouth stuff starts happening.
I was painting Extreme drum kit in my hotel room on a Kick Tracy tour. So I would play a gig, go back to my hotel room, and paint drums for other people.
Let me ask you this. One of my really good friends for years still, but he moved out of the country. I don't see him as much, but is the baseball player, Mike Piazza, who's in the Baseball Hall of Fame and one of the all-time great catchers in baseball history. The reason why I bring this up is because Mike, whenever I was with him, whenever we'd go out to dinner, whenever we'd go anywhere, when he was playing, people would come running up to him and ask him to sign things. And a lot of times being a baseball player, they asked him to sign a baseball, which he once said to me, try doing that and see how hard that is. I said, what do you mean? He said, to sign something that's completely curved all the way around. And I never thought of it. And I did once, he handed me a baseball, I put a pen in. It's like, it's a very weird thing to do.
Yeah.
Reason I'm bringing this up is drums. They're circular, right? Yeah. How do you, is that challenging to do?
It's challenging. It depends on what the graphic is. But, you know, a lot of times, I think one of the early drum kits I did, actually, I think it's a great story because it opened the door to Aerosmith. But I did a kit for Frank. It started as a white drum kit.
Frank and Beard.
I painted, we called it the supermodel kit. I just like went through Vogue and, you know, magazines and just tore it up. I just painted images of beautiful women. So that's where it's really tricky because the face, you know, if it's the proportions aren't right, they're going to look like Picasso, and that's not my intent. So I had to figure out how to do that, you know, and that's where I think I had the advantage of, because I'm a drummer, I know how the drums are going to be set up for the guy that I'm painting them for.
Right.
I know which order the drums are going to be in, which side's going to face out, you know, because I try to make... I want it to look good 20 rows back, you know. It's got to be work together, and not just a drum.
It's going to be lit.
It's going to be, but they're going to be set up together. It's kind of like it's not just guitars are super easy because you just got to worry about the front.
Do you paint on guitars?
Oh yeah,
you've done a bunch of guitars.
A bunch of guitars, and
you didn't do Joe's with his wife on it.
I sure did.
Oh, you did.
Here's my story on that. That's where I was getting to.
Wow.
Because I did that. I did that. The black and white. The supermodel kit for Frank Beard, and after Kick Tracy, I came back home, and that's where he said, "Well, come be my drum tech," and which I was like, oh, "That's the worst part of being a drummer is setting that stuff up. Why would I want to do that?"
Right.
But I had no other options, and I had a daughter. I needed to earn some money, so I started with ZZ Top. One of the very first things I did was January of 94 when they released Antenna. We went to New York to do the David Letterman show. And Frank took that kit, half of it, because Frank has big drum kits, but this was just, they played Pincushion, and it was just a little five-piece drum kit, but it was black and white portraits of supermodels. And who was sitting in with the band that week? Joe Perry.
With ZZ Top?
No, sitting in with Paul Schaefer.
Oh, with Paul. Oh, gotcha. So was, okay, you know, yeah, yeah. Right, they, I remember they used cool. to do that.
Yeah, they'd have okay. Eddie Van Halen, Joe, you know, sitting with the band all week. ZZ was the musical guest, but Joe was sitting in with the band.
Yeah.
That was January of 94. I don't remember meeting Joe, and I don't even remember meeting his guitar tech at the time, but they remembered it. So 6 years later, 1999 or 2000, Joe wants a portrait of his wife painted on the guitar, and they think of me from 6 years earlier, and they track me down, and that's the Billy guitar, which is like super iconic.
Oh, yeah, he plays it like every show, at least a song.
It's been on the cover of every magazine and Super Bowls
sure.
and stuff like that. So that was my foot in the door with Aerosmith as an artist. And it's funny because Joe, when I was at my art show, sent me a text. He sent me his contact. I'm in his phone as John Douglas, famous artist. That's he's had me in his contact since 2000
right.
as an artist.
Right.
Yeah. So
then you walk this line in your career, correct me if I'm wrong, where you actually then work drum tech, setting drums up, being a drum tech, at the same time taking gigs, painting. Yep. I imagine there's times where you've just teched and not painted on the drums and vice versa, obviously,
correct.
Right?
Yeah.
So did you, and you ended up going to work, who are some of the drummers you've teched for?
I started with Frank and ZZ, and then right early on, I got the call for Van Halen, which was like, I was like, oh, these are my heroes in every way. That was 97. So only 3 years after I ever thought of teching.
And now, did you work on Alex's, you worked on Alex's drums as far as painting?
I painted stuff for Alex before that. When I was in Kick Tracy, I was painting Van Halen drum heads and stuff in our apartment in LA while I was still, you know, actively playing and pursuing that. And in many other bands, I painted drum kits for Vinnie Paul and Pantera and, you know, a lot of people.
Does the painting on the drums, does that, did you reach a point with that where it became lucrative enough that you didn't have to tech, or you kind of always had to do both?
I was, you know, if the timing was usually pretty fortunate in that when I wasn't busy on the road teching, I was home and I would paint. Really, once I learned how to paint drums, meaning the hardest part for me was the finish, what to use, how to get a shiny showroom finish. It's all car paint, but the artwork to me is like, that's the easy part, you know. So it's the finishing to make them look like a that came off the showroom floor. So once I learned how to do that, I've painted everything: jet skis, scuba tanks, golf clubs, Harley Davidson's, cars, guitar. You know, I mean, it's all the same.
And what percentage of it is rock based versus just I want some cool image? I mean, because like in your art show over the weekend, and I'm sure that's by design, you're here and you're playing with Aerosmith and all that, the vast majority of it was rock figures, you know, whether it was Billy Gibbons or Slash or Joe or Steven Tyler or whatever. But do you do a lot that isn't that, or is that kind of your forte?
I love music, and I'm a rock fan, and I love I love to paint lots of different things, and certainly in the custom paint field of drums, guitars, or whatever, scoops, jet skis, whatever, it's a lot of times it's more graphic and not, you know, fine art, portraiture, or anything like that. But and I love to do all that because it's a challenge. But for me, if you just have to ask me, what is your favorite thing to paint? It's people. I like to paint portraits, specifically black and white. I love black and white, but I like to paint people. And I'm a rock fan, and I work for a lot of people. I know a lot of people. Now I'm playing with rock royalty, you know, so that's what I paint, you know. And also I learned certainly when I'm starting into this, the art gallery field of fine art, you know, art on canvas, it's the story behind the painting or the artist helps sell it, if you will. So I'm not just a guy with a little bit of talent painting, you know, rock stars. You know, it's like I know a lot of them. I work for a lot of them.
Sure.
I've played with a few of them. You know, so it's that the potential buyer likes that, because that gives them something. If they buy that, it's on the wall. It's like, hey, this painting of Joe Perry playing this guitar with his wife painted on it was painted by the guy that painted that guitar. You know what I mean? That those kind of things. But I don't do it for the commercial aspect of it. I do it because I'm a rock fan, you know, and it's like, if I'm going to paint people. Now, I've painted football players. I have portraits of football players in Allegiant Stadium here in Vegas.
Oh, is that right?
I get hired by the Raiders to paint, you know, but, and I love to do that. I'm honored to do that, and it's a challenge. But I don't have the emotional connection.
The passion is the music stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And it spills over into pop culture. You know, I have some Pulp Fiction type, you know, painting
yes,
with Bridget
I
Bardot.
Saw that. Yep.
And,
yep.
You know,
yep.
So that's, you know, that's a close second of I think we all love the movies and, you know, our
sure.
favorite pop culture people. I did a painting of Willy Wonka, Gene Wilder, you know, that wasn't there. It's at another gallery. But so I do that, and I do that because, A, I like it in those movies that I grew up with. And you know, to try to broaden, because I get people coming in, well, it's like, well, I don't see, I see all these pictures of, and that was the Harry Styles thing was, I would walk into galleries and or my art, and people would come in, and they just kind of go, well, everybody here's, all you do is paint old classic rockers. And I'm like, well, I'm an old classic rocker, so.
Exactly, you know, yeah,
but,
go to hell.
But you know, I'm like, well, that's my music, man. That's
right,
what I grew up
course.
With, and I know a lot of them and all that stuff. And so, and then I would go, well, but. Plus, I'm thinking, well, but the fans of like a Harry Styles or what's her name, Taylor Swift,
right?
You know, I'm like, are there those fans are young? They're not going
right.
to buy fine art,
right?
And the gallery owners go, but mommy and daddy will,
yeah, for them. Yeah.
And I was like, see, I don't think like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was kind of a challenge. That Harry Styles I painted here in my hotel room. Most of all those paintings are done in hotel rooms on tour.
Yeah, I bet.
You know, so
downtown.
The Harry Styles I painted. In Vegas on our first leg of this tour.
Yeah.
So that paint was fresh.
You talked about the fact that you love to paint in black and white. And again, if you just tuned in, I can't urge you enough to go and check out John's work, because it is incredible. JohnDouglas.com is the website. And again, if you're in Vegas or coming to Vegas, even though Aerosmith is done, John's art will continue in the An Amazing Gallery in the Canal Shops by the Palazzo, and it'll be there for the next month or so. So go see it hanging up on the walls. It's beautiful. But I noticed that there was a lot of it predominantly black and white. However, and I brought this up to you when I saw you at the gallery, there are some that have splashes of color.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite ones was the Joe Perry with the red behind it, when
yeah,
he's got
the red scarf to it. Yeah.
It's upside down slung guitar,
burnt,
whatever.
Yeah, the burnt strap.
That's such
yeah.
so badass. So
that he signed.
That he signed. I saw yeah. some of them were signed by some of the.
Yeah.
Gene Simmons one was signed. I
yeah,
saw
Paul Stanley. Yeah.
Yeah. So do what I was asking you this when I saw you. Where do you? What's the criteria for saying, like, when something's done in black and white and that's your preference, saying, you know what, I'm going to actually just make, you know, the headstock on that guitar red or whatever, and that one splash of color. Is that just
yeah.
your thing?
That's just my thing. You know, it's usually I don't think of it in the beforehand. I'll paint the whole thing. I do my backgrounds last, even with the drips and stuff. And I paint the whole painting except for the background. And then if I do, then I paint the background. Let's say it's black and it's too sterile. And I started doing these drips and stuff. And I take the painting from the wall in my hotel room, and I take it into the shower or the bathtub in the hotel room to do the drip, so I don't ruin the carpet. So you know, so it's a challenge. But I do my backgrounds last, with very few exceptions. And it's the same with the color. I just kind of look at it, and like that Joe Perry painting you're talking about, And I paint from multiple photographs. Like the Joe Perry thing that wasn't from one photograph. You won't see that image anywhere except on my canvas. But that scarf was one of his outfits, and it was just, the red was just so vivid. I'm just like, I want to see that on the painting. Nothing else, just like the red scarf. And I did a recent painting of Ronnie Wood, and it's the same thing. He had this red guitar. It was just like so striking that everything is black and white, but I made that guitar red, and it just pops.
Speaking of Ronnie, one of the ones that's in the gallery that got the most attention did not have any color in it, and that was the Four Faces of the Stones.
Stones.
Which, the, what was amazing about that, looking at that, is that's all black and white, but the level of detail, like right to the lines in the face, I mean, there are people gathered around marveling at that. What, how long does it take you to do something like that?
I know, that's the number one question.
I can't imagine.
It's, and I don't have a good answer to that, because so many of them are painted on the road, like I say, and, you know, so sometimes when it's a proper tour, not a residency, you know, I'll roll into town and I'll look for a wall space, and I paint unstretched. The canvas is wrapped around a PVC pipe. I carry that. I carry black paint. I carry white paint. I carry a handful of brushes, and I mix my paint on a drum head, and that's all in my suitcase. So when I'm painting, sometimes I can paint for a couple hours, and then that's it. I got to go do the gig, and then I roll it up, and I go to another town, and maybe I can't, maybe I don't have time to paint, you know. So I don't punch a clock because I love it. So I don't really know, but I know that, for example, when we come in to Vegas, we do 3 weeks at a time, and I come in with a blank canvas, and usually in about 2 weeks' time, it's done.
Right.
And so some of that, obviously, there are shows every couple of days here, right, with Aerosmith, and I don't paint every day. And sometimes I'll paint for 3 or 4 hours. Sometimes I'll paint for an hour. I don't know. Sometimes I get ridiculous deadlines. When I painted Beatles.
I was going to ask you, do artists order these? Has an artist ever come to you and said, hey, or maybe someone in their family or management or something, and said to you, hey, John, I would love for you to do, you know, whatever. Even if it's the estate, in the case of like Hendrix or something, have you ever had it something ordered?
Yeah, I mean, I do commissions. Yeah. I haven't, not from anybody like that at this point, but I do commissions. I get emails all the time. Do you paint people that are not famous? I'm like, yeah, of course I do. But yeah, so I do commissions, but most of, like, all that stuff. And a lot of the guys, like, I painted John Bon Jovi when I was doing a Bon Jovi tour, which is not always the smart thing to do, you know, because.
So you were teching for Tico?
I was teching for Tico. This was 2017 or 18. And, you know, I painted JBJ, you know, because, you know, he had the coolest hair in rock and roll.
Right.
You know, the poster child for the cool hair. And so, and I did that era. He has it, you know. So the second painting I did of Steven Tyler, and I painted that. I played my first two Aerosmith shows in 2019, and then we had like 6 weeks off, and we came back to Vegas, and then Joey came back and played, and I painted a painting of Steven, and he has that original, you know. So sometimes they want him, sometimes they could care less.
Before we run out of time, we had a little time here.
Talking, just...
No, you're great. This is great stuff. I love this, and I can talk forever too. I want to talk to you about playing, because we all know you're doing Aerosmith now, but am I wrong? Did I hear that you actually subbed for Frank Beard at one point? Did you actually play in ZZ Top?
I did.
When was that?
That was 2003. We were in Europe. And specifically, we were in Paris. We had a day off before the show, and I had gone to bed, and it was like 2 a.m. or something in my hotel room, because that was pre-cell phone, I think, or I didn't have one anyway. We still called each other on hotel phones.
Right.
So the phone rings and wakes me up at like 2 a.m., and it's my buddy Billy Hale, who is Dusty's tech. Look, you know, on the road, it's all about practical jokes. And so he goes, hey, you're never going to believe this. They just took Frank to the hospital. And the last thing he said was, get John to play the show. And I was just like, yeah. I said a few choice words, and I hung up because I thought it was a joke. And he called me back. No, I'm not kidding. The ironic thing is, just 2 days earlier, we were in Leipzig, Germany, where the same guy, the tour beforehand, had appendicitis. So he's calling me telling, they just took Frank to the hospital with appendicitis. So I'm like, oh, yeah, what are the odds? Good one. And then the third phone call was Billy Gibbons saying the same thing, and we need you to play the show. So that was probably, by that time, it was maybe 2:33 in the morning. So let me tell you, when you're told you're going to play,
so much for sleep.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So you don't go back to sleep. And that was at Le Zenith, that venue out in Paris, or Zenith, or however they pronounce it. But so I played three shows with ZZ Top, and with like no rehearsal and no sleep, and
powered through.
And it, yeah, powered through. Like and it was great. You know, it was just.
Was it the first time you were called into duty in a situation like that?
Yes.
And besides Aerosmith, has it happened with other bands?
It happened with Slash on his first solo tour. We were
with Miles and those guys.
Yep. We went. We did Europe for like, it felt like a year, but it was, you know, I don't know.
This is when
summer.
Fitz had the detached retina.
This is when, correct. But it wasn't. No, it was first. It was Todd. So we went. We flew. We finished all of Europe. Got rid of the buses and flew to Moscow for the last two shows in Russia, and then we were going home. So we flew to Moscow again. Had the day off. We had a nice crew dinner.
So you were with them though, because you were checking for Fitz.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And I painted a drum kit for him, and so I was so, and me and Fitz, we were buddies, and you know, and so we had a nice crew dinner, and went to bed, and I woke up the next day, and we had like a nice casual like noon checkout, and you know, load in to do the show that night, and I'm checking out in the hotel to go to the gig, and the tour manager taps me on the phone and hands me a cell phone, which is scary, because I thought it was. My wife at
sure.
home thinking that there was a problem,
right?
Because nobody else knows where I'm in, and it's Fitzy, and he goes, "JD, can you play the show tonight?" And I'm like, "What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you?" He goes, "It's not me. It's Todd, bass player, detached retina.
Right.
He's on his way to the airport right now. He's got to fly home and have surgery." So he goes, Fitzy goes, "So I told Slash, I'll play bass. We'll get JD to play drums. We can do these last shows because Fitzy's that guy who plays everything
right,
really good."
Right, right.
And I was just like, so can you do it? And I'm like, oh, okay. You know, so we go to, and it was like July in Moscow, and it was hot as, it was brutal in this inside venue with no air conditioning. I was sick to my stomach just from the heat. So Slash comes in early because he likes to rehearse and he knows. You know, it's pretty important. So we ran like the whole show down at soundcheck, and I was already exhausted, and I'm like, oh, I got to do this again in like 45 minutes. And we did it, you know, with Fitzy on. So I'm playing, you know, these tunes that I've never played before.
Yeah.
And looking at the drummer in the Thin Lizzy t-shirt who's playing bass.
Right.
And I'm looking at the back of Slash's head with the top hat, and it's surreal, just like it was with ZZ 7 years earlier,
right.
You know, looking at the beards playing, you know, Give Me All Your Lovin' and, you know, all that stuff. So yeah, we did two shows. I did Moscow and then I did St. Petersburg back to back with that and flew home. So for a while, it seemed like it was only Europe where I would,
well, yeah, right,
where
right,
that
right,
would happen
right.
until Aerosmith in Vegas.
So the whole thing with Aerosmith is, you know, you get dropped into that spot in a, you know, I'm not going to rehash it all, but there's a fair amount of very public controversy about that time with Joey. And I love Joey. I've known Joey forever.
As
and
yep.
Were you teching for Joey?
Yes.
So how long had you been teching for Joey?
I started teching. I painted after I did the Billy guitar and a couple other guitars for Joe. Then I met Joey and I painted a few kits for Joey back early 2000 or something, but never teched for him. And then I got the call, I think it was 2013. They were going to Japan and he needed a guy. And I just got back from Japan with Van Halen. And I was like, okay. So I did that. And I think I did all of 2014 with Aerosmith, a lot of Europe and US as his tech. And I painted another kit for him, you know, for that tour. And then, but then 2015, I was back with Van Halen and Aerosmith, you know, I was in and out of Aerosmith camp because I had other commitments with Van Halen. And then I did 2 years, then I did Boston and I did Bon Jovi. And then I had already committed to Aerosmith, the Vegas residency. So I came back in 2019. So not a lot of consecutive touring with him, but here and there.
Did you, prior to here in Vegas, did you ever sub for Joey before?
No.
Because there was a time, if I recall, that somebody did, didn't they?
Yeah, his son, Jesse.
His son, right?
Yeah, because
he had a heart thing or something happened,
I
remember.
Jesse played two shows, I think. Yes, that was, maybe that was 2014. You know, I was a tech there, but nobody knew I could play.
Right.
You know, so, and Jesse is a drummer, and, you know, obviously that was a no-brainer, if, you know, that he filled in for Joey.
Now, tell me if I have this right, because I was at this gig. Was the first time you played with Aerosmith at that Music Cares event?
No, and that was a nightmare. No, the first time was it at the residency in Vegas. I got a call. Like,
that was before that?
Yes.
Okay.
So it was isolated. You know, Joey injured and he fell and jacked up his neck and shoulder. And
right.
And I played two shows. And then there was a break and he healed and then he came back. But the Music Cares and the Grammys, that was much. Because that was like April. And then
right.
Music
so
Cares
I saw
January.
I saw the last to date.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up.
Well, it's funny. Well, I got to tell you this. So I saw what is to date the last show Joey has played with the band. I was at it here.
Yes.
And then I remember I went to the Music Cares thing.
Yeah.
You and I talked.
Yeah.
And I remember that. And again, for those that remember, there was a lot of drama and controversy around that with Joey publicly, you know, all that went on. We know it was all out there. But I'm sitting at the Music Cares event, and here comes Aerosmith, and this is my first time seeing them with you. And I'm at the table, and I'm watching the shows, and immediately, being an Aerosmith super fan that I am, I'm sitting there, and I'm saying,
Something's not right.
Guy sucks.
thank you.
Like, what? This is the guy that got to like play. Like, what happened to this guy? Maybe not the drummer sucks. Maybe the whole band sucks. Like, this doesn't even sound like it's locked in. What's going on?
It wasn't.
And I'm looking at I'm looking at you behind the kit, and I'll never forget it. You're going like this, and I'm pointing to my ears with my fingers for the radio audience. You're going like this, and you're like, I suddenly went to feeling like really bad, like, wait, something wrong is happening here. And then then after a song or whatever, it came back around.
Yeah.
But then after the show, I'll never forget, I walked backstage, I saw Dave Grohl was there and Taylor and all these guys that were there, and I'm making my way to talking through everybody, and then I get to you, and you just, before I can even say anything, you're like, my ears went out. And
I had nothing.
Something, like your monitors were out, right?
Yeah, I had they were dead, nothing. And, you know, and I'm behind the amps, and I'm surrounded by cymbals, and I heard nothing. And it was
that's like just
the
being
worst.
Hung out to dry.
Oh, yeah,
the
absolutely.
Whole industry's
and I'm a
there.
Sitting duck. I can't, what am I going to do? Get up and go, you know, I mean, yeah, the whole industry there.
Did the band know? Did the band know what was going on?
I don't even know. You know, I mean, they're so, Steven gave me some choice looks, you know, and I'm just kind of like, it was about halfway through that show when they kicked back on, and then they were 10 times the volume they should have been. And I'm trying to reach, I'm just doing anything, but my hands are kind of busy just trying to hold it together. It felt like an eternity.
You know, I saw Kramer under your riser messing with some
wires. Yeah.
Because he was there that night. He left.
He was.
I said, Joey went under the stage and started messing with John's ears.
Yeah.
But it came together from there, and then obviously, and that was a short thing. It was only like four or five songs or
it
something
like that.
It
felt like an eternity.
I'm sure it probably
song,
did.
Let me tell you.
It sure
if
did.
If I had any power, I would have fired everybody associated with that, every cable. It was the perfect storm of the worst possible.
So then we go into where we're at now, which is this. So Aerosmith announces for this year that Joey's not going to play with them. We know Joey's gone through some stuff and I, you know, sent him nothing but our best. It's,
yep.
You know, with his wife passing, which I knew her, it's terrible. So, you know, you're told you're going to play for this year and you have.
Mm-hmm.
So going into this now, I would imagine completely different sort of mindset because you're prepared for it. You know what's coming. You grew your hair.
That was COVID, you know. I mean, it was, yeah, I know.
So you know, last time I saw you, you didn't have some, you know, the hair you have now.
I know.
So where, you know, what has this whole experience been like for you to have this spot right now?
I mean, even back then, it was beyond surreal. And again, the kind of like the Aerosmith is, as you know, I mean, my opinion, you know, rock royalty. And,
absolutely,
and
yeah.
Legendary on so many levels, and those drum parts, you know, are iconic, you know, to me, drum drum parts are just as important as lead guitar parts and lead vocals and stuff like that.
And I think what Joey did on all those songs is extremely underrated.
Agreed.
I think it's super important part of the fabric of that music, that groove, that pocket.
Yeah. And so, you know, I got thrown in the first few shows where it's just survival. And I'm just trying to get the band through the night, you know, because I'd never played those songs before, and they didn't even do a sound check. You know, I mean, people would ask me, including the band, Joe Perry, after the first show, was like, I can't believe, you know, the balls on you that you would do that. I'm like, I don't know who's crazier, me for saying yes or you guys for letting me, yeah. You know, because I don't know what you were thinking. But it was a miracle, those first few shows. And so, I mean, I learned the songs on stage, you know, playing someone else's drum kit and soldiering through. But the experience, again, you know, I can remember drawing the Aerosmith logos on my notebooks in high school and stuff.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And to be there playing, and, you know, and then sometimes, you know, Joe Perry turning around and he's playing the guitar I painted 20 years earlier. And
you have the pressure, and Joey's talked to me about this over the years. You also have the pressure of the front man of the band being a drummer.
Dude.
And, you know, he'll get up there on that riser and nudge you or look at you the right way or encourage you or push you on, you know, whatever it may be.
And but it's both of those.
Right. It's all of that, too. That's always hanging over you.
Yes. And all of that. Yes. And he's notorious for that. Believe me, that first day I can remember thinking, it's like, oh, why did it have to be this band, that guy, you know, he doesn't miss anything. You know, he does not miss anything on stage. As busy as he is, you know, if I do something that he thinks is cool, I'll get a, you know, a nod or a smile. And if I have a hiccup or something, I'll get an eyebrow, you know, you know, and it's live rock and roll. It's going to happen, you know? So, yeah, but the whole leaning into me and, you know, hey, pointing the mic, I hit that cymbal, and I'm busy over hitting this. And pretty early on, I whacked him on the knuckle, not intentionally, but, you know, his eyes lit up, and I was like, dude, you're in my way. you know, but that's his thing, and he did it. He's done it to Joey for 50 years, you know. So, it's an honor to play with these guys. It's an honor to attempt to fill the big shoes of Joey Kramer, and you know, ultimately, I try to do justice to those parts. You know, ultimately, I'm gonna play them how I play them. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think I read an Instagram thing of Todd Sugarman, the drummer for Styx, mm-hmm. who's a phenomenal player. You know, but he was talking about, you know, yeah, if you line up 100 of the best drummers to play the exact same beat, even if it's something as simple as, seemingly simple as, you know, Back in Black or Highway to Hell, you know, they're all going to play it differently, even though they're playing the exact same thing, because that's the beauty of it. Mm. And, you know, I mean, nobody plays like Joey Kramer.
Right.
They don't, you know, and I mean, how much the Stones feel? I mean, they played with Charlie for 60 years, and now they're out, you know, doing it. And it's got to be different, even though it's,
right,
Steve,
it's not
Steve
a
Jordan. Who's
right,
like,
well, it's I'm, not. No, it's. I've said that all the time. You know, I so mean, it's not an indictment on the person. It can't be the same. That's why there is this super rare, incredibly cool thing about bands that actually do have all the original guys, which was Aerosmith up until recently, which was one of the most amazing things. And again, who knows what the future holds with Joey, and hope he's okay and all of that. But for the foreseeable future, you know, I guess you're the guy and you're killing it, man, because I've seen you do it. And do you know if there's a plan for next year for the band? Or
I know that they're talking about doing cool big things in 23. I don't know much beyond that. I'm hoping.
Yeah.
I think we're all hoping that we see him.
I talked to Brad a little bit about it at your event, and he was saying the same thing. He's just like, you know, we'll just kind of see what happens, and on a bit of a hiatus now, and we'll go from there. So
that threw a wrench in the stuff, but I know that is the intent.
Well, I love stories like that. You know, I love to talk to the guys that, I love to talk to all the big names, of course, but love talking to the people you don't hear from all the time, or the stories
about how they got these opportunities, and what a great story that was from John Douglas. Hope you enjoyed it on the Eddie Trunk Podcast. Another episode next Thursday. Be sure to join me every day for Rock Talk, Sirius XM Channel 103, Faction Talk, Trunk Nation. Tune in every day, 3 to 5 Eastern, noon to 2 Pacific, or listen on demand on the Sirius XM app. Catch you next Thursday for another episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast, and hopefully back on the radio tomorrow.
Live life at your pace. Click the banner or go to visitwilliamsburg.com to discover how. Because here in Williamsburg, life moves at one pace, yours. Here, our waters are splashing and rejuvenating. Our history is for seeing and experiencing. Our theme parks are for riding and sometimes flying. And our great outdoors are yours for exploring and restoring. It's all waiting for you in Williamsburg. Book your trip today and live life at your pace.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.